The Huawei controversy continues to unfold, increasing tensions between Germany and the US. Microsoft kills Windows 7 in 2020 and will start prompting the change to Windows 10 with increasing nagging. And debit cards begin test trials in the UK with a brand new feature. All of this and more here. Welcome to the Cutting Edge Tech. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Cutting Edge Tech, episode 6. I'm really excited for you to join me here today. And let's begin our news story by talking about a company that has been going the rounds in the technology world as of late, Huawei. So, thanks to Huawei, there have been some many things going on with the US. You might have recalled that in a previous episode, I talked that Mike Pompeo said that it would like to eliminate all the Huawei equipments in their infrastructure and will not be working with Huawei to install new equipments in their infrastructure in the USA. Well, the USA now fired back at Huawei, saying that US may punish Germany if it uses Huawei tech. So now it's not just in the mainland US, now it's outside of the USA. And the reason for this is because the UK and Germany have Huawei equipment in their infrastructure. And according to Engadget.com, the US has threatened to limit intelligence data sharing. For those of you who don't know, US and the UK and the Europe and all those countries over there are allies. And they have been allies ever since World War II, except for Germany. Germany came in later, well, for obvious reasons. And according to the article in Engadget.com, the US hasn't been shy about pressuring its allies to ditch Huawei, but now it's turning to threats of serious consequences. The Wall Street Journal has learned that the US ambassador to Germany, Richard Grenell, wrote a letter to Germany's economy minister warning that the US would limit its intelligence sharing with the country if it lets Chinese vendors like Huawei participate in building its 5G networks. Secure communications are vital for defense, Grenell argued, and companies like Huawei could undermine that security. And he's not wrong. Like, Richard, you're not wrong. Because, as previously said on this episode, they've been actively trying to get the secrets of different companies. And they've been shown to have equipment, spying equipment, into the US infrastructure. So he's not wrong in actually doing this as a preventive measure. And I actually applaud Richard for actually pointing this out, like, hey, if you continue to give Huawei support and allowing them to participate in the 5G network infrastructure that you're building, we're going to limit our intelligence data sharing, and we're going to limit the amount of data that you guys receive from us. So you better start doing something. And I applaud Richard for doing this because, honestly, security is top one priority, especially when it comes to intelligence data. Like, intelligence data could be anywhere from military to, like, security measures of the country, etc., etc. You know, it's very sensitive stuff. And you would be wary, you know, if someone would be having equipment that has been proven to be spying on you. Like, no, that I would say, okay, get rid of that equipment and then we can talk. But if you continue to do this, I'm not gonna give you all of the information that I used to share with you. I'm gonna limit that. And you might end up being in a bad spot. So what are you gonna do? Are you gonna limit them? Or are you gonna take measures into not allowing them to use your 5G networks or participate in the building of your 5G networks? What's it gonna be? And I'm all for it, you know, I'm all for my security, I'm all for the privacy. Germany has so far leaned towards allowing Huawei to bid on 5G contracts after an investigation showed no evidence that Huawei could intercept data through its wireless equipment. I'm a bit skeptical about that line, but okay, sure. American officials haven't publicly produced evidence so far, instead focusing on the potential for security threats and charging Huawei with sanction violations and trade secret theft. They haven't produced evidence so far. Sure. How about the fact that they actually get people from other companies that have recently quit quickly calling them up so that they can have the secrets of the company stolen from them so that they can clone actual products from other companies? For example, Huawei Mate, which is a laptop that Huawei makes, looks pretty similar to a MacBook Pro. I'm not sure, but the similarities are just too much. The WSJ, which is the Wall Street Journal, understands that Germany already intends some security measures to keep Chinese firms honest, including source code inspections and oversight of people running 5G networks. Alright, I'll accept that, because you actually have to look at the source code in order to actually learn if the programs or the equipments are actually going to be stealing data. So, okay, sure, I'll let that one slide. But still, I'm pretty skeptical about this. It continues to say, and this is the last paragraph of the article, if the US follows through on the threat, it could have significant ramifications for the UK and other countries that have decided to allow Chinese equipment in portions of their networks. This could certainly create headaches for companies like Huawei. There may be a shutout of major markets simply because countries fear losing vital security data, even if those countries don't believe Chinese firms are a real threat. Honestly, I'm not going to judge on the skepticism and the value of losing vital security data simply because they're worried about something and the fear of something. It's better to fear something and then be proved wrong that, okay, maybe I shouldn't have feared as much as I should have, instead of going blindly towards something that you don't know that could happen, and then all of a sudden, uh-oh, we're in a problem because now this guy knows what I want to do and they shouldn't have known. So yeah, I'm a bit skeptical about all of this, and honestly, I would probably enforce a little bit more in terms of security measures, because source code inspections and oversight of people running 5G networks, okay, sure, but how far will the oversight of people running 5G networks will be? How vast will your source code inspection will be? How minute and how minuscule are you going to get? How detailed are you going to get into what you're going to inspect, and how detailed are you going to be oversighting the people running those 5G networks? You can only go so far. Like, humans make mistakes. Like, I make mistakes. Governments make mistakes, clearly. And companies make mistakes as well. For example, Samsung with their Note 7, that was a bomb. And Huawei with their Chinese equipment actually spying on stuff and actually stealing secrets from other companies. They make mistakes. Some of them don't actually want to, accept that they make mistakes, but hey, to each their own. But I would impose a bit more restrictions and a bit more restraints on Huawei based on the track record that they have. I don't know, that's just me. That's what I would do, because I like to be secure. I like to have my information go to point A to point B without someone in the middle, you know, and that's the risk that the countries are running here, that by allowing a company that has a proven record of actively looking for people that have quit their jobs in big companies, calling them up, not for an interview because, oh, if you just lost your job, come over here, we're going to give you a job. No, just come here, tell me the secrets of the company, and then we'll let you go. Because sometimes they don't even hire them. They just want the secrets from the other companies, and they're like, okay, don't worry, don't call us, we'll call you, and then just leave them on the streets. And like, come on, man, are you serious? I would honestly get more uptight with the security in terms of Germany and the UK, because like I said, oversight can only get you so far. Source code inspections can only get so far. And how minute and how detailed are you going to be in those inspections? That is my question. If you're going to be very, very, very minute and very detailed in all that you do, and you're going to have an oversight committee or whatever you plan on doing, overlooking all of the things that happen in there, then I would, okay, I could give it some slack, but honestly, I wouldn't trust this much. I'm looking at a pattern here that people in the UK and Germany are a little bit too trusting in Huawei. And honestly, I applaud the US for being that uptight with their security, because that's how it has to be. Because China doesn't have a proven record of actually being the most honest country. But I wouldn't allow that to happen. Like, I would totally be okay. You're going to be in my network. Don't worry about it. We're going to pay you to actually get inside our networks and work on the 5G networks. But don't you dare think that just for a second I'm going to leave my eye out of you. I'm going to have my eye on you all the time. Don't you dare get sneaky with me, because I'm going to boot you out of here. If probably Germany would do that and the UK would do that, I wouldn't have a problem with this because that means that they're enforcing security privacy. They're enforcing the security measures. They're enforcing the privacy measures for their countries. If they're going to do that, I don't have a problem. Now, if they're not going to do that, I would be wary and raise a red flag. So, congratulations to Richard for doing this, for writing this letter to the Germany economy minister and letting them know about their actions. And good on the US for taking those actions into account. I applaud that. Good for them. Now, we'll be right back with some more here on the Cutting Edge Tech, so don't go anywhere. This next story could be a little sad for some. At least in my opinion, it's a little bit of a sad one, so stay tuned for this one. And we are back here at the Cutting Edge Tech. Thank you for joining me here today. And now, ladies and gentlemen, a somber note, a somber day is upon us. Soon, Windows 7 will reach its end of service date. Yes, it is a sad day for Windows 7. It is a sad day for those who have grown up in the Windows system and have cherished Windows 7 for what it was, a wonderful and great piece of operating system. I myself know that aside from Windows XP, Windows 7 is probably one of the best operating systems that Windows has ever seen and that Microsoft has ever released to the public. For those that may be a little bit on the off of what Windows 7 was, let me give you a little history lesson. So, when I was a little boy, I was treated to the gift of a computer, and that computer had Windows 95 on it. So, yeah, I'm not that old, okay? I'm only 24, okay? So, I was treated with a copy of Windows 95 on my computer, and I loved it. It was pretty good. And then after that came Windows 98. And then came Windows XP. Before Windows XP came Windows ME Millennium Edition, which honestly I didn't think it was that good. I liked the intro logo, but hey, that's another story entirely. So after Windows ME Millennium came Windows XP, which according to some, myself included, is another of the greatest operating systems that Microsoft has ever released to the public. But today we're not talking about Windows XP. Windows XP has already passed away to greener pastures, just like its wallpaper used to show us every day. Windows 7 has finally reached the end of its service date in 2020. According to the piece in Business Insider, Microsoft will stop providing security updates to Windows 7 in January 2020. So, therein lies the end of service date of Windows 7, and I'm actually kind of sad because, like many people, Windows 7 to me was one of the best operating systems, like I said, that Microsoft ever released. I loved it. It was one of the most stable operating systems that it had. There was Windows XP as well, but Windows XP has already reached its end of service in 2012. If I'm not mistaken, in 2012 was its end of service date and has already passed away to greener pastures. Windows 7 is still ongoing. Windows 7 is still ongoing, but it will end in 2020. And here's the problem. Microsoft has already Windows 10 out there, and Microsoft loves them some Windows 10. So they're going to start nagging you to, from Windows 7, go to Windows 10, which is kind of annoying because they used to do that when Windows 10 was already starting. You know, when Windows 10 was gonna start out into the public, they started nagging you, hey, you should update to Windows 10, you should upgrade to Windows 10. Well, now they're gonna do it increasingly higher. It continues to say the company will start sending notifications to Windows 7 users about the final deadline starting in April 2019 and will prompt users to upgrade to Windows 10. Honestly, Windows 10 is starting to get better, but in the start, it was horrible. So I'm actually not that iffed in terms of upgrading to Windows 10 now, because now is when Windows 10 got actually quite decent. Still not perfect, still far away from what Windows 10 was, from what Windows 7 was, I'm sorry. But it's better than what it used to be when it started out. And of course, just like every other program, it starts off kind of buggy, it has its kinks here and there, and then they start upgrading it to make it better. So the article says Microsoft will stop delivering security updates to Windows 7 machines in January 2020, but the company will start nagging you to upgrade to Windows 10 starting in April 2019. Beginning this month, if you are a Windows 7 customer, you can expect to see a notification appear on your Windows 7 PC, Microsoft said in a blog post on Tuesday. Windows 7 users can expect to see the notification a handful of times in 2019. I wonder how many handful of times do they actually mean? Like, once every time you turn on your computer? Because that's not a handful of times, Microsoft, just so you know. You kind of did the same thing with Windows 10 when it started. You were n constantly nagging users, myself included, to upgrade to Windows 10, and we finally took the plunge after a few months. I took the plunge a few months bef after Windows 10 had gone public, and to be perfectly honest, I didn't like it at first. I was completely against Windows 10, but I kept on through, I kept pulling through, and I managed to get acquainted and used to the interface of Windows 10. And right now, I'm actually kind of enjoying it a little bit, but not that much as I did with Windows 7. To me, Windows 7 was the most stable version of Windows operating system out there, aside from Windows XP, only surpassed by Windows XP. That's all I'm gonna say. Despite no notifications, Windows 7 users will still get security updates until January 2020, like I said, but after that date, Windows 7 users will be susceptible to vulnerabilities in the Windows 10 operating system that could crop up after the last and final security update from Microsoft, and the company won't be patching those vulnerabilities. So basically, they're telling you once January 2020, the last update for January 2020 happens, you're on your own. If something happens to you, if you get infected by a virus, or if you get something out of going to through the internet, and the internet has gone through to making viruses that could damage Windows 7 users, you're on your own. We're not patching those. You can't blame Microsoft, it continues to say, as the company has been warning you that it's ending Windows 7 support since 2014. That is true. It even extended its original end of support date from 2015 to 2020, which is pretty generous. Also true, I remember when they said it was 2015, but now they pushed it to 2020, and I was begging and praying that it continued on. But I guess that's why we can't have nice things, you know. We just can't. Windows 7 users could totally ignore those notifications, and they can even set the notification to stop appearing should they wish. Okay, that's something that you didn't provide when Windows 10 actually started, Microsoft. I could have used that when it started. Thank you very much. It's probably a better idea to upgrade to Windows 10, though. It's just not worth the risk of becoming a victim of a security vulnerability for the sake of saving $140. One could easily argue that those who are still using Windows 10 got their money's worth out of the old operating system. True, but I would say that until January 2020, you can still push it a little bit. You know, because here's the problem. Here was one of the benefits of upgrading to Windows 10 when it started. They were giving out Windows 10 for free. Now you have to buy Windows 10. And I'm speculating here, that if you upgrade to Windows 10 now, you could have it for free, but I'm still skeptical about it. Don't quote me on that. Because I think that now they might be charging for it. I know that in the beginning, when Windows 10 actually started out, they were giving it away for free. That's how I got it. It continues to say, better yet, you could treat yourself to a nice new PC that comes with Windows 10 pre-installed. Indeed, chances are your Windows 7 computer is on the older side if it came with the Windows 7 operating system. Microsoft's notification for Windows 7 users to upgrade to Windows 10 will even contain a link that leads you to newer PCs that run Windows 10. It's likely that even some of the cheapest Windows 10 PCs will outperform your current Windows 7 PC at this stage. True. I'll give them that. That is true. The computers that are coming out are much more powerful than what they used to be. I remember having a computer, a Toshiba computer, not a sponsor, Toshiba computer that was Windows 10. It came with Windows 10. And I was so happy with that computer, and it lasted me for 10 years. Like, literally 10 years. Because I had it ever since I entered high school when I was in 10th grade. I started high school, and my parents gifted me that computer for the university, for the future in the university, and to do my jobs in high school. And that thing was killer. I loved it. I really loved that computer, hence why it lasted me so long. And you wouldn't believe what I did with that computer. Like, I put games in it, I ran music on it, I ran games, like I said, I installed programs, I've erased that computer, I've changed the operating system to Linux when I was experimenting in my university years. Well, during the early stages of my university years, when I started when I started in biology, I tried to change the operating system to Linux, operating system Ubuntu to be exact, but then I reverted back to Windows 10. And after that, I went into like the current major that I'm in, which is computer and networks installation and repair. I continued on that trend of changing operating systems between Windows 10 and Ubuntu and Kali Linux and Debian for a project that I had. I actually changed to Debian for a project that I had since I already bought a new computer, but I still wanted to keep my old Toshiba. I came up and completely eliminated the Windows 10 in my old computer and got into Debian. But I reverted back to Windows 10 and I continued to use it until recently, actually, when it literally just flatlined. Because I tried to turn it on and it just went beep, like literally a flatline. The BIOS has certain sounds that tell you, hey, something's wrong with the equipment, and the computer just outright flatlined, because it wouldn't turn on, it wouldn't show the graphics, it wouldn't show up the screen, it would just completely freeze and beep. And I said, okay, retiescat in pace. But that's rest in peace in Latin, I think. I hope I pronounced it wrong. I may have butchered it, but hey, don't quote me on that. So I had that computer for like a little bit, not too long ago, and I still yearn for that computer to someday respond, which would be completely impossible at this point. So I think it's time to give it a proper burial. But we're not talking about my old computer. We're talking about Windows 7, and Windows 7 is dying. It continues to say, whichever upgrade route you choose, whether it's upgrading your old PC to Windows 10 or buying a new Windows 10 PC, you should back up all your data before upgrading. Of course, you as always. In fact, that's what I tell most of the people that come to me with a problem with their memories or with a problem with their storage devices. Always have a backup. If your computer is starting to give you problems, always have a backup. Get an external hard drive or some sort of media that you can use, external media that you can use to safeguard all your important data, all your most important data. Forget about the meaningless data that you can afford to lose. Gather your most important data, save it outside of the computer, just in case your computer decides to just go out on you like my Toshiba did. And to do so, you can either use an external hard drive or back up all your stuff into Microsoft's OneDrive cloud service, where you get a free terabyte of storage. A free terabyte of storage. Now I'm actually curious. As for commercial Windows 7 commercial users, that's a bit of a redundancy right there, Business Insider. They will be able to buy Windows 7 extended security upgrades for Microsoft, as always. Here's the problem with some people. Well, not with some people, with Microsoft itself. They say that for the users, like the normal users like you and me, they end their support to us first, and then they go for the enterprises. Like, if you're gonna end the service, just end the service outright. And like tell them, hey, upgrade your equipment to Windows 10, which has an enterprise solution. I've seen the enterprise solution. I work with it at my job. It is a pretty solid enterprise solution, although I still prefer Windows 7 Enterprise. But it's a pretty good solution, and I think that crossing over from Windows 7 to Windows 10, obviously in a programmed, calm fashion, because if you, like, all of a sudden, okay, the Windows 7 is ending, we have to change to Windows 10 right now. If you do it like that, you're just going to screw up your system. Like, go in a timely manner, set up some dates, hey, we're going to be upgrading to Windows 10, be aware that you will see this change, but don't worry, it'll be all right. And slowly shift into Windows 10. And there, you saved yourself all the trouble. But it sucks because it cancels the services for us, but it keeps it for the enterprises. That's something that I've always disagreed on Microsoft's behalf, because it's just unfair. Come on, guys. Like, treat everybody equally, okay? Equal rights and all that. Anyways, that's the bit of a somber note on this episode, but right now we're going on to a topic that's actually pretty interesting, and I'm actually quite intrigued about this and see how this one pulls out. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back here with some more on the Cutting Edge Tech. And we are back here at the Cutting Edge Tech. Thank you for joining me here. And after that somber note, to a more of an interesting type of news today. So, debit cards. We all use them. We all have one. We all have that little piece of plastic in our pockets that basically guards our money from a bank that we decided to entrust with our money. Now, they've gone through several changes. First of all, the black strip, which is a magnet that has a code in it, and that code is a single code. Then they went to RFID scanners, which was the little circle, the little metal circle in their cards that could insert it into the machine so that they could read a code. That code always changed, but now they're upping up the game to include biometrics. And what are biometrics? Biometrics are iris scanners, fingerprint scanners, face ID, those types of things. Those are biometric scans. So, in the UK, a company by the name, well, a bank called NatWest is trialing the use of a new NFC payment, which is near frequency communication, payment card with a built-in fingerprint scanner. So, basically, they're trying to implement fingerprint scanners on debit cards. Now, I don't know how this is going to work, but this sounds really, really interesting, because this could add another layer of security to the debit cards. For example, they could use this biometric security so that unless you have your finger on the card, it doesn't activate. So I'm assuming this is the purpose. It continues to say here, the trial, which will include 200 customers when it begins in mid-April, will allow its participants to make NFC payments called contactless in the UK without needing to input a PIN or offer a signature. The standard £30 limit from contactless payments will not apply when the fingerprint is used. That's pretty interesting. Currently, anyone can make a contactless payment in the UK by tapping their card to the terminal to make a payment, which is basically like putting the card on top of the scanner or the card reader, and it'll automatically go beep, and then it will automatically get the payments out of the card. As a result of this lack of security, a £30 limit is applied to such payments. That's in the UK. They should do this. With retailers requiring you to place your card into the card reader and enter a PIN for more expensive purchases, commonly referred to as the chip and PIN method. Although mobile payments require authentication, customers often find they're subject to the same £30 limit. It continues to say the fingerprint data is stored locally on the card, meaning there's no security information for a hacker to be able to steal from a bank's central database. It's not foolproof. There's always the risk of a sufficiently determined thief could steal and imitate your fingerprint, but it's much more secure than a PIN, and someone could learn by easily looking over your shoulder as you enter it. They're true in this sense, but I'm actually pretty impressed that they took it a step further in terms of card security, because just the RFID scanners, even though the RFID scanners were pretty secure by the time they got out, right now there's much more convenient ways of getting into the security card details and everything like that. And I appreciate the fact that this bank is taking it a step further and saying, okay, we're not just going to have the RFIDs, we're also going to have fingerprint scanners, so that it adds another layer on top of another layer of security, which is amazingly good. And I applaud this bank, this British bank, NatWest, and I hope that it passes the trials, and I hope that it gets over here into the US so that we can start using those types of securities in our cards. So be wary of that we might soon have fingerprint cards. And since it says it stores the data locally, that also eliminates the risk, like it says, it eliminates the risk and the security information from a hacker to be able to steal from a bank's central database. That is a good thing in and of itself, because that means that the card does not transmit that data to the bank. Therefore, it is not accessible to the bank, and it's not accessible to a hacker that hacks into a bank's database. That's a pretty good layer of security, but I'm also concerned because it says it's not foolproof, because there's always the risk of a sufficiently determined thief could steal your data and imitate your fingerprint. Like I said, all these systems have some techniques, and you cannot call something hacker-proof. Like I said in previous episodes, you cannot call something hacker-proof because someone will come in and say, oh, so it's hacker-proof. No problem. Give me a second. And it'll continue inventing ways into getting into that information until it gets to the information. It just like it says there, there's going to be a sufficiently determined thief that could steal and imitate the fingerprint. So it's not foolproof. It's a really good technology. I like it. Let's implement it, but let's add a little bit more of a, let's keep more of an eye. And I'm honestly excited for this, because it means that people are taking into account that banks need more security. Like I said, banks are not foolproof. They're not hacker-proof. There have been banks that have been hacked by either hackers that want to do harm or hacktivists that want to send a message to those banks, hey, upgrade your security. Because there's from both sides, from good and bad, and also security professionals that dedicate their lives to this and actually go into the banks and say, okay, you need to upgrade this security and you need to upgrade this security. So what are you going to do about it? So good on NatWest for actually doing this. I'm actually happy for this, because like I said, this is a new advancement in the technology that they're using in credit cards and debit cards. So let's keep on this innovation. Like I'm always excited when there's an innovative thing coming up and something that looks really good. Let's hope this trial goes the way it actually needs to go, which is one of the most secure ways of protecting your bank account and your bank data, which is amazing. Let's just keep going that way. Good on you, NatWest. I'll be looking forward and paying attention to any advancements that you make on those trials. And on that note, we'll be closing this episode for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Cutting Edge Tech. It has been wonderful. Thank you always for the support that you give me on this new adventure that I'm seeking. Thank you so much for being a part of this new project that I'm in. I really appreciate all the support that you guys have been giving me. And I now have a Facebook page. Shocker, I know, but hey, I have to put it somewhere, because not many of you have Anchor, and usually most of you get notified via my Facebook page. And yes, I'm one of those that hasn't left Facebook yet, because I honestly, well, you know, I could use its help, at least for the time being. You know, I'm using it for my own purpose and my own gains. I have a new page on Facebook. Go follow it. It is at Cutting Edge Tech Podcast. All the episodes that I release from this podcast will be posted on that page for you to actually listen to and hopefully enjoy. So thank you so much for joining me. Remember to go to Facebook and write in the search box at Cutting Edge Tech Podcast all together, no capital letters, no nothing. Like the page, share it with your friends and family. It would really, really help me with this, and I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining me, and as always, keep it techy, my friends. I'll see you guys next Wednesday with a new episode on the Cutting Edge Tech. Cutting Edge Tech is a technology news podcast focused on the latest news that occurred during the week between episodes. The opinions expressed in this podcast are strictly from the host and should not be taken as absolute facts. If you'd like to suggest a news article to be discussed in the podcast, send it to me at cutting.edgetechpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear them. Thank you, and see you in the next episode. And remember, keep it techie, my friends.